Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And today we're going back to February 1779, when the British explorer Captain Cook was brutally beaten to death on his third voyage of discovery. Simon Watts reports.
In early 1779, Captain James Cook, the greatest navigator of his age, landed at Kealakekua Bay in Hawaii. The sailors on board HMS Discovery and HMS Resolution could finally go ashore after months at sea.
As we approached, we were surrounded with upwards of 1,000 canoes at the mean rate of 6 people in each. And so very anxious were they to see us, the decks, both above and below, were entirely covered with them, so that when we wanted to work the ship, we could not come at the ropes without first driving the greatest part of them overboard, which they bore with the utmost cheerfulness and good nature. Midshipman George Gilbert.
Once the British were on dry land, the friendly welcome continued. By chance, Captain Cook had landed during the season of the local god of harvest, called Erono, and Hawaiian high priests, like one known as Kirikea, appeared to greet him like a living deity.
A procession of Indians carrying a baked hog, breadfruit, sweet potatoes, plantains, a pudding and coconuts approached towards us with Kirikea at their head. He repeated two or three words at a time and was answered by the crowd repeating Erono. The kernel of the coconut was chewed by Kirikea and wrapped in a piece of cloth, with which he rubbed the captain's face, head, arms and shoulders, and did the same to Mr. Bailey and myself. After this long and tiresome ceremony, two men with wands went before the captain, repeating the same word as before, Erono, on which all prostrated themselves. Lieutenant James King.
While the officers were being worshipped, the ordinary sailors enjoyed themselves, trading their iron for food or the favours of the Hawaiian women. The island seemed the perfect place to overwinter before heading out for further exploration. One sailor was particularly taken with the curious local sport.
We saw a number of boys and girls playing in the surf, which broke very high on the beach as there was a great swell rolling into the bay. They provide themselves with a thin board, about 6 or 7 foot long and about 2 broad, and after struggling a while in such a treacherous wave that we should have judged it impossible for any human being to live in it, they rise on the other side, laughing and shaking their locks. Surgeon David Samwell.
The explorers planned to stay in Hawaii for a while, but soon the mood changed.
The locals were basically getting fed up with the visitors. Food was running out. In a way, I suppose you could describe it, that Cook and his men were outstaying their welcome.
Vanessa Collingridge is a biographer of Captain Cook.
A couple of other things happened as well. One of the crew members, an elderly sailor called William Watman, he had a stroke and died. And he was buried at the start of February with full Christian ritual. And the locals realised that these were just ordinary mortals. And that caused a shift in their behaviour. And this mood was beginning to make itself very, very visible.
The Hawaiians began making very clear go away gestures to the sailors. Captain Cook decided to move the two ships on, but almost immediately disaster struck.
We sailed from the bay, but we discovered a spring in the head of our foremast, which obliged us to put back to repair it. We got in the next day and moored as before. The natives did not appear to receive us this time with that friendship that they had done before.
This time when they came into Kealakekua Bay, it was empty of people. There were no canoes, there was no food, there were no women coming out to greet them. The other change that happened was that the amount of thieving started to increase and became a real problem, especially on board the Discovery. Cook's reaction was very interesting. He said at the first sign of any trouble, fire ball rather than shot. Now, Cook always wanted his men to have a softly approach up until this point. But now he was saying, look, if you get into trouble, you just shoot to kill.
In fact, Captain Cook's judgment had been erratic throughout the voyage. Vanessa Collingridge says there were many reasons for this change in behaviour.
He was getting old, he was getting tired, and also He was battling a ship that was falling to bits and provisions that weren't as they should have been, and everything was kind of conspiring against him and bearing down on him, making him extremely grouchy. There's also the probability that he was suffering from something like intestinal worms. It's been surmised that he might well have had some kind of vitamin B deficiency that would affect him neurologically as well, that might also account for the outbursts of temper.
On February the 14th, 1779, Captain Cook's fury erupted for the last time. He awoke to find that the Hawaiian thieves had gone even further than before and stolen a small boat.
Cook immediately demanded that the bay itself was sealed off. He had people positioned on the north end and the south end. He decided to go ashore himself and took a small boat of men. They climbed up the beach and went to the house where the king was residing. Now, they asked the king to come as a hostage, voluntarily as a hostage, with his sons back on board the ships. This is a plan that Cook had used many, many times before. He took hostages, they got back what they wanted, and then the hostages were released. This time, it didn't work out as planned. The king's wife broke down in tears and pleaded with him not to go. This seemed to change the mood of people watching. They also started saying to the king, Don't go on board the ship. We're worried about you. And Cook began to notice that the warriors were beginning to pick up stones. Now, unbeknown to Cook, while all this was happening at the north end of the bay, down in the south of the bay, a high-ranking chief had paddled in a canoe and tried to break through the cordon. The men, the Marines, had lifted their guns, shot and killed him. Now, when the other Hawaiians saw at the south end of the bay what had happened, a tidal wave of anger swept up northwards across Kealakekua Bay, hitting Cook and his men at the very time when their own crisis of the king refusing to get in the boats was also reaching its peak. Cook signalled the boats to come in and collect him, to get his men off the beach that was getting so out of hand. He never got there.
Captain Cook was seen walking down to the pinnace, holding his left hand against the back of his head to guard it from the stones and carrying his musket under his arm. An Indian came running behind him, knocked him on the back of the head with a large club taken out of a fence, and instantly fled with the greatest precipitation. The blow made Captain Cook stagger two or three paces. He then fell on his hand and one knee and dropped his musket. As he was rising, another Indian came running to him, and before he could recover himself from the fall, drew out an iron dagger and stuck it with all his force into the back of his neck, which made Captain Cook tumble into the water. They now kept him under water. One man sat on his shoulders and hit his head with a stone, while others beat him with clubs and stones. They then hauled him dead on the rocks, where they struck him with their daggers, dashed his head against the rock, and beat him with clubs and stones. Surgeon David Samwell.
On the return of the boats informing us of the captain's death, a general silence ensued throughout the ship for a space of near half an hour, it appearing to us somewhat like a dream that we could not reconcile ourselves to for some time. Grief was visible in every countenance, some expressing it by tears, and others by a kind of gloomy dejection. For all our hopes centred in him, our loss became irreparable, and the sense of it was so deeply impressed upon our minds as not to be forgot. Midshipman George Gilbert.
Witness was written and produced by Simon Watts. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.